Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen in.
This week in the news, a film, Resilient, a story by David Ouimé and Caleb Gringas, featuring Quebec trail runner, photographer, and mental health advocate Alex Côté-Dureur, will premiere at Café Au Lodge in Saint-Sauveur, Quebec. Following the premiere, the film will be released online. Follow us on Instagram to find out the latest news on where and how you can watch the film. In today's episode, you'll recognize that the voice you're listening to is different from the one usually in your ears. After over 100 episodes of hosting the show, the time has come, and Justin Pugliese has moved on to launch his own channel, fittingly titled Justin Stride. Look out for it in the podcast app after you finish this episode. Please go like and subscribe to the channel. The show trailer is currently out, and you'll be first in line when the first episode drops. What you're about to hear is the recording of our second conversation with Ben LeClaire, a professional wakeboard athlete who suffered a spinal cord injury in 2017. The conversation was recorded in front of a live audience at the Red Bull offices in Montreal, co-hosted by guest host Emma DeGara of the 6 a.m. Run Club and myself. To accommodate the live audience, the conversation with Ben is bilingual. Emma and I take turns asking questions in both French and English. So if you need help understanding, don't worry, we'll be publishing a video with the subtitles shortly following this release. Enjoy this episode. We hope that Ben's story will inspire you to support Wings for Life on May 7th and run for those who can't. That's all for now. Gotta run.
Merci tout le monde. Thank you everyone for being with us. I'm going to do this, my portion in English. And I have with us today my guest host, Emmanuel, who will be a little bit more franglais based on the conversation and kind of being able to express ourselves. But I want to thank everyone for being here. I want to thank our guest, Ben LeClaire, for coming back to, with us. We are here in the Red Bull headquarters, and we're just having a conversation with Ben to continue the first interview that we held with him for the rundown. I want to start this off first by introducing to everybody what Wings for Life is, what Wings for Life the World Run is. So I'm going to read this part. The Wings for Life World Run is a truly unique global race for both runners and wheelchair participants. Instead of a finish line, competitors race side by side to keep ahead of the virtual catcher car. Now in its ninth year, on May 7th, 2023, Wings for Life World Run participants in Canada and in Montreal will meet up with your friends, download the app, and join others around the world running until the virtual car catches you. In Montreal, we'll be hosting the race in Saint-Henri, down by Le Chine Canal, and the race starts exactly at 7 a.m., so if you show up at 7:01, you'll be playing catch-up. We'll be there very early for a warm-up, probably a cup of coffee. And the way the race works is that 30 minutes after the race, the virtual catcher car starts, and it goes, it speeds up, and eventually it catches everybody, and that's when your race is done. So There is no finish line, and we are here running for those who can't. The path that we have is wheelchair friendly, so it means if you have mobility issues or if you're pushing a stroller, there's no excuse to not come out. Come walk with us, run with us. We're all here to raise funds for those who can't, to walk for those who can't, and raise funds for spinal cord research. So the final thing is, if you're listening to this when you're on your run, hit pause, go download the Wings for Life app and sign up right now. You guys in the room, you can jump on your phones and look up the Wings for Life app and register. First, I want to introduce our co-host for the event. Emmanuel is an ultra runner, distances around 80 kilometer races with lots of elevation. 80 kilometers, so about four half marathons, two marathons, not flat ground. So very experienced and seasoned runner, very passionate about it. And then she's also the leader of the 6 a.m. club in Quebec. And I'm going to hand over the mic and let you introduce yourself quickly, and then we'll pivot to Ben.
OK. Puis moi, je vais continuer en français. Ça va?
Oui,
comme ça? OK. Ben oui, c'est ça. Donc, comme Leslie m'a présenté, Emma, coureuse d'ultra-trail, puis j'ai commencé il n'y a pas si longtemps, en fait, en 2021, juste la piqûre. Puis à un moment donné, on ne sait plus vraiment où arrêter, puis on aime les sports extrêmes, donc on continue comme ça. Puis ma mission aussi, c'est vraiment d'être impliquée dans la communauté de course, puis de partager, en fait, ce bien-être-là, de bouger. Donc, quand j'ai eu l'invitation, en fait, de me joindre à vous, j'étais vraiment contente. Puis Ben, j'avais jamais entendu... en fait, j'avais vu tes choses, mais j'avais jamais vu, puis je te connaissais pas du tout. Donc, je suis tellement curieuse d'en apprendre plus sur toi, en fait. Puis là, j'ai eu la chance de me renseigner, mais j'aimerais ça que tu parles à tout le monde qui te connaît pas encore. Qui est Ben Leclerc avant, aujourd'hui, ton parcours?
Je dois parler en français, mais...
As you wish.
En fait, j'ai 29 ans. Puis je fais du wake depuis que j'ai environ 13-14 ans. Je me dis, si jamais mon micro, ça fait. En fait, je faisais ça à temps plein. C'était mon travail. C'était, dans le fond, c'était mon rêve. Là, de... J'ai rêvé ça quand j'étais jeune, puis je pensais jamais que ça allait fonctionner. Puis bonne place, bon moment, ça a tout fonctionné. Puis j'ai réussi à vivre ma passion pendant quelques années jusqu'à temps qu'il arrive un accident, puis que je me fasse une double fracture au cou. Mm. Fait que je me suis réveillé le lendemain dans un hôpital complètement paralysé à grandeur. Là.
Puis t'avais quel âge quand c'est arrivé cet accident-là?
J'avais 23.
Puis ça faisait combien de temps que t'étais pro wakeboarder?
Depuis que j'avais 17 ans à peu près.
Puis est-ce que tu veux nous parler un peu plus de cet accident-là? Comment c'est arrivé? Qu'est-ce qui s'est passé?
En fait, j'étais en Floride pour faire un... On faisait comme un portrait, un genre d'article, en fait, avec un magazine américain. Puis ça faisait 7 jours qu'on construisait comme un... Dans le fond, c'est un setup privé sur un lac privé qui est juste pour ce genre de choses-là. Puis c'est pas du wakeboard typique en arrière d'un bateau. Là. C'est vraiment c'est des lacs artificiels avec des élévations différentes, avec des marches entre chaque lac. Puis la rampe que j'ai frappée, elle a brisé. Fait qu'au lieu de monter d'un lac à l'autre, ben, je me suis ramassé à l'envers entre les deux. C'est là que ça a arrêté.
And so, the video that we just watched happened about a month before you had that accident. Obviously, the accident is what led you to the wheelchair. Can you walk us through that experience, kind of waking up in the hospital with the doctors around? Tell us like what that was like being in the moment.
It's really surreal. It's hard to even explain. Like for me, I just thought, okay, it's like it's kind of a dream. You know, you don't even like. It's hard to understand, and you can't really. It's hard to even like get all the infos at first. So you're just there, and you're like, all right. Especially for me, since I had the tube in my mouth at first because I couldn't breathe, I couldn't talk, so I couldn't ask any questions. So I was just like, okay, to me, I always think it's going to be fine, and you don't really know how bad it is until they kind of explain it to you a couple of weeks later. So at first, to me, it was just like just another bump on the road, and like I was just taking it a day at like one after another, and I think that's what helped me a lot during my whole recovery. But it's almost a bad thing to not know, almost a good thing not to know, because that way you just picture your goals and you... I think you can kind of, if you're closed-minded about it, you're kind of going to break yourself down.
Right.
And I think, to me, not knowing exactly what was going on is what pushed me to be where I am today, I think.
So after, I want to jump into that, but sort of like after the first couple of weeks settled and you regained a deeper understanding, and obviously the doctors are able to run some tests. Can you break down for us in more layman's terms, like what had happened?
Well, I broke two vertebrae in my neck, which got me completely paralyzed from my neck down. So I couldn't breathe, I couldn't move. I had like pretty much my traps on one side working so I could do this. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't really anybody to tell us like, hey, you got to start rehab. Because now we know a little bit further out that the sooner you start, the better it is. You can help the pathways of your brain and your neurological system. But at that moment, it was just like, all right, we're winging it. My sister was on Google and it's just like, all right, what can we do? They were trying to bend my knees, do stuff with me in my bed. And the doctors were just like, hey, don't touch them. Don't do this. Don't do that. And we'd just be like testing out and trying whatever we thought was fit for the situation, which was really not in our understanding at that moment. But I think even if we would have asked the doctors at that moment, they wouldn't really have pushed us in the direction of trying to do rehab as fast as we could. But unfortunately for me, since my injury was such a high level, if you can't really move by yourself, it's really hard to start like controlling something and pushing yourself. So right. That's what really took a long time in my recovery, because like now you can see I can move my arms a little bit. It makes you be able to actually feel something, and you can understand, all right, the movement starts from there. I can link from my brain to the muscle. All right, this is the path. And you kind of just work your way through that. But the first movements are the hardest to get because you're just trying everything. Like let's say for me, I was in my bed and I was like, all right, I think I move my toes right now, but I can't see them, so I can't know. I'm trying to move my elbow, my knee, my back, whatever you're trying to do. You don't have any feedback coming back. So you're just like throwing all the neurons out there and nothing's really coming back.
And so what were the doctor's kind of expectations at the time for your future mobility?
Well, most of the time they just say the most negative stuff so that it kind of doesn't give any false hope. Yeah, false hope for the person. But comparing to other injuries that were similar to mine, they were telling me that there was pretty much no chance of recovery in anything else than my right arm. They're saying you'll be lucky if you can even lift your right arm to feed yourself or stuff like that. And even at first, it's like, oh, we're not sure if you're going to be able to breathe by yourself. You've got the machine, and it's kind of like, at first, I think after the first week, they would test me with like taking off the breather just to see if you're going to take the plane, because I was in Orlando. So when you take the plane, if something goes wrong, you've got to have a little bit of like a 5 minute, 10 minute gap.
Window.
Yeah.
Right.
So I was practicing, okay, can we do the 10 minutes? Because like we wanted to come back to Quebec, because I thought like I had this whole dream in my head that I was going to come back to Quebec and there's going to be a nice rehab center as like I thought there was going to be, which was the total opposite. If I would have done my rehab in the States, it would have been probably way better. But we were really trying to get as fast as we could, get back here and just like get the breathing machine off and try to focus on the next couple steps. But it took much longer than that because there's a lot of complications, especially because all the breathing machine, it gets you, I got ammonia, a couple stuff like that
really. So there's extra complications in addition to what you're going through.
Yeah.
I want to learn a little bit more and share with everyone the sort of like mental strength that it took for you to work through that. The people listening and kind of in the room are preparing for their run challenges. And
the same thing, pretty much.
When you look at it, well, that's in a much lesser degree, right? Where you're starting out running, you're looking at trying to hit maybe your first 5K, or you're training for your first half marathon, and you have the kind of grueling, longer format races. But I'd love to hear about the resiliency that you had and how kind of we can apply that at a much smaller level into our lives.
Well, I think it's the hardest part, like in everything, is just starting. You know, just like the first kilometer, the first time you're going to go out, you're going to tell yourself, all right, I'm dressing up for this, I'm putting my shoes for this, and like really starting. And then like to me, I compare it to all the sports I was doing before. Once you kind of get the feel of it, you can kind of know, all right, well, this is when I mess up, this is what it looks like. When I get it, this is what it looks like. So you just grow from that. So I kind of took what I knew and pushed it in my rehab. But like I said, at first it was hard because everything you try to do when you can't move, it's hard to set like, all right, I've done this a little bit better than it was yesterday.
Je veux juste sauter un peu là-dessus. Comment ça se passe, comme la définition de tes objectifs à partir de ce moment-là? T'sais, quand t'es dans, tu disais que comme la recherche n'était pas si avancée que ça, puis il n'y avait pas nécessairement comme de guidelines à te donner à ce moment-là. Est-ce que tu savais déjà qu'il fallait que tu parles à ton muscle pour qu'il se passe quelque chose, puis qu'au bout de plusieurs semaines, tu allais commencer à avoir des résultats? Est-ce que tu le savais, ça, ou c'est comme à force d'essayer, puis parce que tu étais genre vraiment acharné et déterminé que ça s'est matérialisé?
Bien, j'ai eu un peu d'aide, là. Dans le fond, il y a une fondation aux États-Unis qui s'appelle Road to Recovery. Ils suivent beaucoup d'athlètes de motocross qui se payent souvent la colonne vertébrale qui affecte leur moelle épinière. Puis, en fait, à cause d'un de mes commanditaires, ils m'ont comme plugué avec cette gang-là que j'étais vraiment chanceux parce qu'ils ont un genre de protocole, vu que ça arrive tellement souvent, qu'ils ont comme certains commanditaires, dont une compagnie qui est une. C'est des tents. Bluetooth pour faire toutes les muscles de ton corps. Puis là, eux, ils m'ont dit, OK, le plus rapidement tu peux, commence à essayer de faire fonctionner les muscles que tu penses que tu es capable de sentir. Parce que le gros problème avec ça, c'est que même si tu stimules tes muscles, il faut que, mettons, une personne normale, tu vas le faire, tu vas dire, OK, mon niveau de tolérance, là, quand tu le mets à 50, là, ça fait vraiment mal. Ou mettons, c'est un 6 sur 10, mais moi, si on le mettait sur mon épaule, je ne sentais rien. Fait que là, on était comme, mais là, ça n'a pas l'air de forcer, mais tu sais, tes muscles s'atrophient quand même assez rapidement. Fait que moi, là, on était rendu peut-être à 2-3 mois de mon accident. Fait que 2-3 mois, quand tu fais rien, là, tes muscles, ils shrink. Là. Fait que, on mettait les tens, puis mon père, il boostait ça dans le fond jusqu'à temps qu'on voit mon muscle forcé. Puis là, on se disait, penses-tu que t'as mal? Bon, je suis pas sûr. On l'enlevait ça, c'était rouge vif, là, tu sais. Mais quand même, on disait, OK, mais si ça force, puis ce qui était weird, c'est que moi, je me disais, OK, mais on dirait que je le sens, tu sais. Même si mon épaule gauche, ça a pris un an avant que je la sente, même un peu plus, je sentais un petit quelque chose qui était juste assez pour me dire, bon, mais là, si j'ai un feeling, je pense que, tu sais, je me dis, s'il y a une goutte qui passe, à un moment donné, il y a une gorgée qui passe. Fait que j'ai tout le temps été avec ce mindset-là. Puis, on a peut-être fait des choses qui n'étaient pas la meilleure affaire, là, tu sais, mais on a tout essayé ce qu'on pouvait, puis ça a été quand même très bénéfique comparé à ce qu'on s'était fait dire. Mais si c'était à refaire aujourd'hui, c'est sûr et certain que la technologie est vraiment plus avancée. Puis maintenant, on peut voir vraiment c'est quoi le feedback de ton cerveau avec les muscles que tu as qui fonctionnent. Qu'est-ce qui se rend? Parce que tu sais, souvent, les tests qu'ils te font à l'hôpital au début, ils te demandent, OK, bon, essaie de forcer. Est-ce que tu sens, on te passe une petite ouate sur ton doigt, mettons, est-ce que tu sens ça? Sinon, on te le pique avec un petit, comme un dard de métal. Puis là, ils vont tout faire l'évaluation avec ce que tu sens et ce que tu ne sens pas de ces deux petits tests-là. Mais souvent, c'est vraiment... comme moi, mettons, là, ma main gauche, là, on faisait tous les tests dessus, je ne sentais absolument rien. Mais une fois, de temps en temps, dans la journée, on dirait que je sens un petit muscle qui force à quelque part. Fait que là, je me disais, crème, moi, je sens quelque chose dans mon poignet, je pense. Puis là, tu essaies de convaincre les médecins pendant 3 semaines. Je vous dis, là, on devrait essayer ça dans mon poignet, je pense que je sens quelque chose. Ils sont comme, ben nous, on lit ton test, là, puis tu sais, c'est des professionnels, ils ont fait ça, puis ils disent que non.
Mais c'est ça, je pense qu'à un moment donné, dans votre dernier podcast, tu disais que comme tu n'écoutais plus les médecins, puis tu n'essayais même pas de leur répondre. Finalement, tu étais genre, you know what, you'll see, là, vous allez voir à quel point je vais être capable, dans le fond, de bouger mes bras, genre. Puis je pense, est-ce que c'était un peu ça ton mindset, ou tu as travaillé quand même tout le temps en collaboration avec eux, puis, mais tu sais.
Je suis sûr qu'il n'y a pas eu une très grande collaboration.
OK.
Parce que moi, quand j'ai vu au début qu'il me disait qu'il n'y avait pas grand chance, ben je me suis dit, on va voir au privé s'il n'y a pas quelque chose d'autre. Puis j'étais chanceux à ce moment-là qu'il y avait une place à Montréal qui s'appelle Neuroconcept. C'était la seule place que tu pouvais aller. Fait que moi, dans le fond, je faisais la réadaptation dans le jour avec eux, avec le centre de réadaptation, puis le soir, j'allais au privé.
Okay.
Puis là-bas, là, c'était un autre game complètement. Ils disent, c'est pas vrai qu'après 6 mois, dans le fond, les médecins disent après 6 mois, c'est comme le deadline. Si t'as pas eu la récupération motrice, t'en auras pas. Puis là, après ton 6 mois, il dit, ben là, c'est 1 an maximum. Puis là, après ton 1 an, ah, mais ça peut être 2 ans si t'es chanceux. Mais tu sais, moi, je le vois, là, après 6 ans, j'ai encore des avancées, tu sais, cette année. Tu sais, si tu le vois que c'est... En fait, il n'y a pas une personne qui va guérir de la même façon, mais il n'y a pas de recette non plus. Tu sais, on n'a clairement pas compris encore comment ça fonctionne, une moelle épinière, sinon on l'aurait réparé, là.
Bien, c'est ça, j'allais dire. C'est vraiment pour ça, j'imagine, que tu t'impliques autant dans la cause puis que tu veux qu'on lève des fonds, tu sais, activement pour la recherche parce que tu les vois concrètement, les avancées qu'il y a dans le domaine, là.
Oui, mais surtout, dans le fond, sur la lecture, tu sais, voir... Imagine, moi, je me dis, si dans le jour 1, on m'avait dit, OK, on voit que tu as une fibre nerveuse qui connecte de ton triceps gauche, mettons. Ben moi, j'ai passé... 4 mois à faire le même mouvement parce que moi, dans ma tête, c'était mon poignet là, que je pensais qu'il fonctionnait, tu sais. Mm. Fait que si t'es... Peux pas, si t'es juste à côté, mais ça passera pas, tu sais. Wow. Faut comme tu focuses sur la fibre nerveuse qui connecte, puis tu peux comme partir de ça, puis expandre. Mm. Mais ça, j'avais aucune idée, là. Puis même encore, ça a l'air facile à dire aujourd'hui, mais c'est quand même assez complexe, là. C'est ça. Mais faut que tu partes d'un chemin qui fonctionne un peu, puis tu développes à partir de ça. Tu sais, comme moi, mettons, mon cou fonctionnait. Ben là, à partir de ton cou, tu peux un petit peu aller avec les muscles de ta posture qui longent ta colonne. Ben, tu sais, moi, je me dis, ah, ben là, si c'est pas mes grands dorsaux, ça va être quoi? Tu sais, je pensais pas là, qu'il y avait une ligne, pas une ligne, mais comme une chaîne musculaire qui se connecte. Qui... Tu sais, en fait, tous les mouvements que tu fais, c'est une chaîne musculaire de tellement de muscles. C'est comme moi, je me disais, bon, ben, moi, ma première chose que je voulais faire, c'était manger. Fait que, qu'est-ce que ça prend? Là? Pour moi, c'est... biceps, poignet, épaule, mais c'était, tu sais, une rotation externe de ton épaule, c'est beaucoup, beaucoup de choses. Il faut que toute ton épaule soit stable. Là, comment tu fais pour te dire, OK, là je force celle-là, après ça, celle-là, après ça, celle-là. Là, ça me prenait quelqu'un qui me guide. Fait que là, j'avais quelqu'un qui tenait mon bras, qui tenait mon poignet. Là, on me strappait les mains, on essayait des affaires. Là. J'avais du tape à grandeur des mains, des bras, puis ça a été beaucoup d'essais-erreurs, mais j'ai été chanceux dans ma malchance que je commençais à avoir des améliorations qui ont fait que j'ai compris un peu le pattern de réapprendre quelque chose avec mon bras droit, qui m'a fait réapprendre beaucoup mon bras gauche par après, pour après ça pousser vers le contrôle, mettons, thoracique, un peu plus de mon corps. Mais quand même, tu sais, j'ai encore beaucoup de chemin à faire, là.
Ouais, mm-hmm. Oups, sorry. Well, I was gonna jump in on that and say, one thing that I'm always remarked by is just your positive attitude through it. Like, you're talking about it now, but even back then you were really optimistic on what was possible, not wanting to listen to doctors. Where do you think you got that from? Like, how did that evolve in your character to bring you through these times?
I think it was right off the bat since. When they told me, oh, well, you're probably going to have this machine to help you breathe for forever, probably. And when I saw that a couple of weeks later, I was able to start breathing a little bit on my own. And then we were, like, when the doctors weren't there, I was always asking my dad, hey, just unplug it, let's see what happens. And we try it all the time. It's really simple. You unplug it, you spin, and you pull. My dad was pretty easily convincible. But
wasn't worried about... pulling the plug.
He told me the first time, he's like, I saw how they put it back in, so we're good.
Awesome.
And as soon as I saw that, all right, well, if they tell me that this is impossible and it's already pretty close to being possible, then I thought it sucks for them, but their credibility kind of went out the window at that moment.
Incredible. And now the technology is really advanced and trickled down where you were saying people who are suffering from spinal cord injuries have the ability to get the feedback that you were looking for. Are you using some of this equipment now and still through your recovery?
I'm not at the moment because it's not really available here, but I'm following everything that's happening everywhere else. But it's some good stuff is coming soon, but we just, like, right now I'm working with a project with some researchers in Montreal, but we're still in the funding process. So the whole thing is pretty much set to start, but we just don't know exactly when it's going to start. But it's something that's happening at a couple places around the world. So we can see already, all right, these guys are doing this and this is the result they're getting. And like I said, there's no injury that's the same. So you really got to take it like person by person. But there's really cool stuff coming up. So
Along those lines and talking about your recovery, I think the first Wings for Life race that you participated in was in 2019. And do you want to tell everyone about your... is it technically a wheelchair? I don't know the term for it. It's like a bike.
Yeah, it's like a bike. It's a hand cycle.
Do you want to tell kind of the people in the room and listening sort of like how that works differently from a normal wheelchair? And I think you had hit 10K, if I'm not mistaken.
The first time I rode for 10K, but I got caught up by the app at like 6 or something, even less than that, 5 or 6. But I still, like, to me, the goal was, all right, the loop is 10, let's make the 10. Even though I'd never been close to doing 10 before that. But I didn't have that much preparation with the bike outside. Like I was saying earlier, it's a bit of a process just to understand the whole thing, shifting. And especially at that moment, I couldn't really feel my left hand. So I couldn't really control my muscles in my right arm, in my left arm. So I was pedaling with my right bicep. So you can imagine it's... hard to control where you're going, but at least the place we're doing it was kind of a straight line. And I had help from everybody around me when we were turning. They'd help me turn. They'd help me shift. And most of the times I couldn't even brake, but I wasn't going that fast, so it was kind of good.
Well, it kind of touches on, I think, one of the first experiences that I also had with Wings for Life, and why it's such like a race that I feel like everyone can benefit so much from. And you got caught at 6K and finished a loop, and that was like your physical exertion. I think for me, running the race, when you have that 30-minute head start, that's most people's run for a lot of beginners runners. So you finish that, and you might probably be exhausted and catching your breath, but you can walk, and the car hasn't caught you yet. So inevitably, with every people that you see along the course, and you get a little bit of motivation, and if you found a buddy, then maybe you take another minute and you run a little bit, and you walk and you run. And the first time that I participated, I think everyone that I knew had ran further than they had ever run before in a single race. And I think that's really the experience that I try to share with first-time runners, is you have such an ability to sort of like break that limitation that you might have felt before the race going into it. So it's incredible to hear sort of your stories echoes that as well. That was the first year of running Wings for Life, and in 22 you ran again and got further on both times. Have you set a goal for this year?
Well, this year is a little bit more complicated, but the biggest gap is definitely from the first race to the second one, because that's when my left arm really started picking up on mobility. And that's when I really saw, the first race I did was really with one arm. Because when I was doing it, I was convinced that my left arm was helping much more than it was, until it started working much better. And then I saw, all right, this is so much easier now. And it was like, even if I was always, because one of my main training in my rehab was to ride like a kind of like a similar machine that looks like that bike, because I was always picturing, all right, what am I going to have to push myself in a certain physical activity? And like, I knew I wanted something that was going to bring me outside, but like, I was going to take pretty much anything I was going to get at first. And when it started, I had like a machine that would turn by itself, so like my right arm was trying as much as I could. Okay. And I had electrodes on all the muscles in my arms, trying to do the motion that you're supposed to have and triggering your muscles at the right timing. So I was always kind of thinking in my head, like, everything's working out. Like, everything's working as it should.
Right.
But then I would do it at my house. I bought a bike like that, and I put on a roller. And that's when I really saw, all right, like, this is not the same game when I'm on the bike. But it was a really good, I have a trademark in my head, but I don't think that's the word.
Like feedback tool?
No, kind of like a statement, I guess, in my rehab to see, all right, now I can do this amount of kilometers with Wings for Life. And next year, whatever my goal is, I really see how far I've pushed my rehab with the bike. Because whatever other rehab activities I'm doing, I'm always kind of going back to the bike. Because that was the only thing that I could sit on for hours and focus on myself. Like, all right, I'm pushing with my right arm. I got to translate the same movement in my left arm. And it was the only thing that I could actually do alone. Because all the other rehab stuff I was doing was always help. Like any mobility that right. I'm trying to have, there's got to be somebody that moves the movement with me and does something.
Right.
Which with the bike was really, I guess, the most independent interaction with the physical training I could get.
When you're going through training, are you focused on a specific sort of like muscle group or area or something that you're trying to improve on with your mobility now?
Yeah, the main thing is that when I'm biking outside, both of my arms are pedaling at the same time. And when I'm biking indoors, I switch the pedals, so I do it independently, one at the other. And that helps me a lot, because this way I can really focus with my left arm. Because if not, when I'm biking outside, even if I'm trying to do it with both arms, my right arm's the most dominant muscle, so that's what takes pretty much everything. So I kind of, now it's going to be much different, because I'm much more stable, I guess, between the both sides. But before, my bike was really set up to be like, it's always turning on the right side because my right arm is pulling more, and like everything was set up to be helping the physical ability I had. And I think this year will be the first year that I'm really set that the bike can go anywhere. I can go left, I can go right, I can brake, like do everything right. But the only thing that sucks is that this winter I broke my hand. I broke my thumb getting caught in the wheel. So that really messed up the rehab that I thought I was going to make. And since I just got the bike as well, like I haven't really been training much. But instead of being like a 5-6 month preparation, it's going to be a 1 month jam-packed preparation. But I'm still thinking I'm going to beat my record. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But we'll see you on that day.
Sick. C'est trop cool. Mais justement, je voulais comme aller un peu... Je sais que tu as quand même un background de sport d'extrême, en fait. Là, genre, t'aimes ces feelings-là. Comment tu arrives à les retrouver? Là, j'imagine que tu dois avoir un petit thrill qui arrive puis que tu ressens à l'intérieur de toi de devoir t'entraîner pour une quand même grosse course en un mois alors que tu aurais pu prendre 6 mois pour t'entraîner pour ça. Est-ce que tu arrives à retrouver comme les mêmes sensations un peu d'extrême que tu avais avant dans le bike, par exemple, ou juste dans tes autres activités, dans le recovery, le strength que tu peux faire? Je me pose la question.
C'est sûr que le bike, c'est ça qui me pousse le plus physiquement.
Mm-hmm.
Tu sais, c'est complet.
Ouais.
Quand je finis de faire du bike, c'est cardio, musculaire, c'est un peu de tout. Puis c'est sûr que le côté adrénaline, veux pas, c'est peut-être plate de même, là, mais je le rejoignais parce que t'es pas capable de freiner. J'étais pas capable de tourner comme il faut. Tu sais, c'était pas ça que je voulais. Là. Je voulais pas passer proche de tomber en bas de la piste cyclable, mais veux pas, ça arrive souvent. Puis pour moi, c'était comme la seule chose que je pouvais faire qui, même si pour moi, d'aller le plus vite que je pouvais, c'était 6 km/h, là. Ben quand même, c'est déjà bien plus vite que ma chaise. Puis en même temps, c'est comme là, je suis dans une chaise manuelle en ce moment. Mais dans la chaise électrique, tu sais, c'est la seule chose que je fais, c'est avancer ma main.
Mm-hmm.
Fait que là, d'avoir le contrôle de ma vitesse puis de où est-ce que je vais, c'était quand même tellement un gros upgrade que j'étais déjà comblé à ce moment-là. Mm-hmm. Fait qu'après ça, tout était de l'extra. Fait que là, de voir que je peux aller plus vite, je peux déjà de réussir à faire quelque chose comme après ça, de pouvoir en faire avec ma soeur qui avait commencé la course un peu avant le premier Wings for Life. Ben là, c'était comme notre activité. Tu sais, comme, OK, toi, sans faire ton training, toi, quand tu cours, c'est un petit peu plus vite que moi en bike. Fait comme, tu sais, pousse-toi pas au max, mais c'était comme, c'était notre training qu'on pouvait faire ensemble. Puis là, de voir comment elle a tellement évolué, puis moi aussi avec mon bike, que c'est drôle parce qu'elle a fait Wings for Life dans l'Ouest maintenant, parce qu'elle a déménagé. Puis l'année passée, tu sais, elle s'est vraiment entraînée fort, puis moi aussi. Puis on a fait exactement le même score. Chacun notre bord.
Tellement hot.
Ouais.
Mais c'est cool parce que ça te permet vraiment de retrouver comme l'aspect de sport, de communauté, de partage d'expérience dans un sport qui est comme accessible pour tout le monde en plus. Tu peux le pratiquer quasiment partout, le bike.
Mm-hmm.
Puis dis-nous, c'est ça, peut-être que j'ai pas bien compris, mais as-tu un objectif pour le set ou ou pas vraiment, ou tu veux juste faire meilleur? Ou...
Ben, je veux absolument faire mieux que mon score l'année passée, qui est comme 12,5, je pense.
Ouais.
Je l'ai dans mon sel, c'est sûr que je vais le savoir la journée même. Mm-hmm. Puis dans les prochaines, tu sais, la première fois que je vais faire du bike dehors, c'est sûr et certain que je vais regarder, tu sais, je vais pas me faire des accroire que la première fois que je vais être dehors avec ce bike-là, je vais battre ça. Là. Même être dans les mêmes ranges, tu sais, les mêmes paces et tout ça. Mais je me dis que si je le bats de 0.1, je vais déjà être content. Mais à chaque année, je me dis tout le temps un but de comme, OK, ça va être 1 ou 2 kilomètres de plus. Puis la deuxième fois, j'ai doublé mon score de l'année d'avant. Puis l'année passée, je me souviens, j'étais avec un de mes amis, ça fait 2 ans qu'il le fait avec moi. Puis c'est quand il reste comme 15 minutes, il est comme, ben là, t'es supposé d'avoir fini, là, moi, mes trainings, je me pratiquais pas pour ça. Là. Puis lui aussi, il se pousse, puis tout le monde...
Tu l'as brûlé, dans le fond. Là.
Ouais, mais c'est ça qui est le fun, t'sais, l'application nous fait faire ça. Mais en même temps, comme tu dis, t'sais, le sentiment de communauté, moi, de pouvoir faire ça avec mes amis, même si on est tous des backgrounds un peu plus de snow, de skate, d'autres sports, ben, cette journée-là, on est tous des coureurs et on va tous gagner. Là,
mais là, de plus en plus, tout le monde est des coureurs de toute façon. Fait que je pense que de plus en plus, c'est vraiment un sport populaire, je dirais. Puis est-ce que tu as un objectif aussi en termes de fundraising pour, toi, personnellement, tu t'impliques énormément dans la cause. C'est là aussi aujourd'hui pour nous parler. Est-ce que tu as un objectif de lever des sous, comme... un montant que tu as envie de lancer dans les airs puis que tu as envie d'encourager tout le monde à donner pour la cause?
Ben, je vais pas avoir l'air pessimiste, là, mais tu sais, je me dis que peu importe ce qu'on va avoir, tu sais, overall dans toute l'application, tu sais, worldwide, là, on ramasse comme 6 millions. Je me dis que moi, que je ramasse 5 000 ou 10 000 ou 2 000, je me dis en autant qu'on est une grosse gang puis qu'on va avoir, tu sais, je sais qu'on va sortir de ça, qu'on va être content cette journée-là puis je me mets pas de pression à mettre 1000 de plus ou 2000 de plus, parce que je me dis la rehab puis la recherche, ça coûte tellement cher qu'il faut juste essayer de ramasser le plus qu'on peut. Là. Puis faut pas être déçu si on a 5000 de moins ou ça coûte déjà un bras la recherche. Là. Fait que je me dis, rendu là, on peut que aider. Là. Fait que je me dis, il n'y a pas beaucoup d'autres événements qui ramassent autant de fonds pour la recherche de moelle épinière. Je me compte déjà bien chanceux qu'il y ait tout ce spotlight-là sur ça, puis qu'on arrive tellement plus proche à une recette gagnante. Tu sais, comme moi, je l'ai vu, là, tu sais, ça fait pas 10 ans que je regarde la recherche là-dessus. Là. Puis dans les 6 dernières années, ça a tellement évolué qu'à chaque année, tu sais, on se rend de plus en plus compte que ça sera jamais une pilule magique qui va réparer les moelles épinières à tout le monde, vu que c'est tout le monde des blessures tellement différentes. Mais là, on commence à voir, OK, c'est un mix de... plein de recherches ensemble. C'est plein de sortes de rehab avec, tu sais, il y a des cellules souches de la stimulation électrique et de la stimulation de cervicale, de moelle épinière. Ça va être un package deal qui va faire en sorte qu'on va pouvoir réparer tout le monde. Mais on se rapproche quand même de plus en plus du but. Tu sais, puis moi, je me dis, je le vois, le end goal. Fait que ça soit cette année ou dans 5 ans ou peu importe quand, je pense que c'est dans notre lifetime qu'on va le voir. T'sais.
So I love that.
Still be lying.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say, I'd love to kind of ask that question again in English, as was curious about sort of part of kind of before Wings for Life, but now you run under your team, the Bend Squad. So I was curious how kind of. If I can ask you again in English, like, what's the goal that you have for this year? For is it to raise more funds? Kind of, what does that look like as hitting success for you?
Well, I'll start the Bend Squad thing. I'll start it with the brand company I used to wakeboard for. They made a board that was named the Bend Squad a couple of years ago, and that's why we kind of just stuck with that name, and all the fundraising always was around that, and. A lot of the wakeboard community kind of goes into that team. And that's how last year we had like 100 people in the team. So I don't really care if anybody joins or doesn't join. As long as you're in the app and you're in the Wings for Life, that's all I want, you know? But if you're on the team, it's just cool to see at the end where we all see each other, especially with all of my friends that are like, they've never really seen me with the bike and they kind of try to compare, like, are you much faster than me? Because a lot of them, I see them like once a year in an event or something, yeah. And they have a lot of trouble picturing myself going the same speed that they're doing. So it's always just kind of a challenge to see, all right, he's not going to beat me, you know?
That's awesome. The I wanted to segue because the one of the things that I think is kind of incredible about your story is, and I think can broadly apply to everybody, is sort of like the big focus publicly these days is an emphasis on mental health for everybody. Obviously, going through sort of a life change injury like that, do you have tips and advice for people who are maybe struggling through this that you use yourself that you found really helpful through your recovery, maybe things that you practice even presently or discovered through sort of different treatments?
Well, it's not a magical recipe. I think it's just it sounds cliche to say take the little victories, and even a lot of people told me that before and I was like, what is that, you know? But just like I was saying earlier with the bike, when I started, it's just, all right, I'm going to do 1K today. And there was no, like, it's not going to be at a certain pace or under a certain time. It was just, I'm going to be able to do it, whatever happens. And it starts by that. And then once you make one, and a couple months later, I'm making two. And just to see the small steps you're trying to do in advance, once you look back on them, you're like, damn, I can't believe that was my goal. You know, because today you're much further. But once you see it the other way around, you just got to elevate it a little bit there, a little bit here.
You make it sound very simple. Mm-hmm. I don't know, right? But it sounds like it truly is just like one step at a time and appreciating and acknowledging that step.
And it's kind of hard, especially when you have an accident like this, when you lose so much, it's hard to make little goals. Because you're trying to, like, to me, it's like, I don't care about cycling with my arms. I want to be on a normal bike and then running and skating, doing whatever I want to do. But then once you realize how good it feels just to make a little improvement, then that's when you figure out, all right, well, I'm just going to keep on that little route of improving whatever I can. And once you can achieve being happy with that, then you can't really be mad about anything that's getting better. You know? So as soon as you focus on, I guess, the small victories,
right?
Like I was saying earlier, then you're going to get better whatever you're trying to do.
And you mentioned it in French, that the research is improving and we're sort of on the cusp of a breakthrough. Are you talking to people who have recently had suffered spinal cord injuries? I don't remember if we discussed this before, but did you have somebody that you were able to talk to when you came out of the hospital, and now are you able to kind of fill that role? What kind of impact does that have for you and for the person you're talking to?
Well, anybody who asks me that has a certain injury that's similar, I'm always trying to help them because I know how devastating it is. And even though I might not answer in the first couple of days, I'm always going to finish by answering. Like, anybody who's tried me about that subject is going to get a certain feedback at one point. And I've made Zoom calls with families and with people, and I'm just trying to set out all the knowledge I have because I wish somebody would have done the same with me. But I was lucky enough to have somebody who helped me a lot in the beginning. It's another guy called Brad Smealy, and he got an injury a year and a half before mine, wakeboarding as well. And he has a little bit higher level injury than I have. And he hasn't really recovered any physical motion. So he pretty much only drives his wheelchair with his head. And he's given me all the tips he had and everything he knew at first, which helped us a lot. But since my injury is a little bit different than his, it's...
Yeah.
Damn, I got a big spasm.
No problem.
That doesn't happen often. But
that's an example for
that's how I broke my hand this winter.
So for people listening to it, Ben just had a little bit of a muscular, what would you describe, muscular contraction?
Yeah, that's in my back. It's really weird.
Does it hurt?
Not really.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But the... Is there another thing, topic I was curious about? Did you get advice that... did you get bad advice that you wish that... Well, just open-ended. Did you get any bad advice that, upon reflecting, you're like, that person was crazy, that doctor was, that specialist? What was maybe something that that you were taught, that you were told that you learned wasn't helpful for your treatment?
I guess not trying. There's a lot of therapists that were saying, oh, you shouldn't even try this, don't even try that. You're looking too far ahead. You're wishing much more than what you should try. And I guess, like I was saying in the beginning, if you don't know, it's kind of all, you're almost better off. Because right. That way you're just trying and you're just thinking, well, you never know. Like some people, they get an injury that looks exactly like mine. And 6 months later, they're up and they're doing everything they were doing before. So if the doctors told them, hey, don't try. Right. If you're not trying, you're not going to get better. That's for sure.
It's shocking to hear the experts who are supposed to be much more knowledgeable than us at these things, or than the patients at these things, having that negative energy. The do you see again in French? You kind of talked about the advancements. Do you sort of think about the future, and do you see at some point in your lifetime where the research will catch up and you'll have another kind of like leap in your recovery?
I think so, yeah. With what we're trying to do in Montreal, it's called neuromodulation, and you're trying to boost the signal at the level, the cervical levels of your neck. And we've seen improvements in a couple of people around the world where you can gain mobility in your hands. And to me, that would be the biggest improvement to help all the rest of my recovery. Because right now when I'm trying to do workouts in the gym, stuff like that, I need people to help me strap on, like you can see, like holding this, like gripping stuff to work out, or pushing myself to get back in the chair. Like when I fell earlier, if I wouldn't have had this in my hand, I would have grabbed the wheel, and which isn't the greatest thing because that's how I broke my hand. But that's the biggest issue for me, is not having the control of my fingers, which would give me a lot of independence to push myself in rehab a little bit more independently, which would make everything a little bit faster. Because a lot of times when I'm trying to work out in a certain way, well, I got to wait for somebody to come help me do this, do that, set me up. And then when I'm trying something, well, I know I've got a certain time limit because I'm going to need help to do other things, you know? Right. So I think, like, I don't want to say, oh, if my fingers worked, I'd be much better off. But I've seen that if we can get improvements in really fine movements like fingers and hands, if you can get the control of this, it's much easier to get control of bigger muscle groups like quads and other stuff like that.
Puis, je me demandais, justement, ça, c'est quand même un gros projet. Tu sais, ton mode de vie actuellement, il ressemble à quoi? Si tu peux, tu sais, faire un parallèle, puis nous le faire réaliser aussi. Puis également, tu sais, justement, le futur que tu vois pour toi, tous tes prochains projets, est-ce que tu continues aussi dans le film? C'est une très large question, mais j'ai comme... On parle beaucoup du passé, tu sais, du processus de rehab, mais je suis aussi vraiment curieuse de savoir, genre, maintenant, comment ça se passe, puis qu'est-ce que tu vois pour le futur aussi?
En fait, moi, j'ai toujours voulu me pousser créativement, puis avant mon accident, je faisais du montage vidéo, mais moins intensif que maintenant. Puis avec la... Dans le fond, moi, ma rehab, au début, mon premier projet, c'était de respirer puis manger. Mais après, c'était le cadre de contrôler mon ordi. Okay. Puis, je me suis retenu pendant 2 secondes. Je ne sais pas si mon dos allait repartir comme tantôt.
On peut prendre une seconde.
Je ne sais pas. Je vais peut-être être correct.
Ouais, si tu veux, on peut se prendre une petite pause. Peut-être prendre le micro, vu qu'on...
C'est bon, il va se... J'ai la technique.
Il y a beaucoup de péripéties.
Ouais, c'est beaucoup de choses à essayer de comprendre en même temps. Là. Mais pour revenir à ta question, dans le fond, vu que j'ai réussi à être capable de refaire du montage, ben, je me suis focussé vraiment là-dedans pour... dans le fond, c'était un peu mon échappatoire, tu sais, d'entendre tout cet accident-là, d'être capable de faire quelque chose créativement, de surtout indépendamment, tu sais, faire quelque chose sans avoir l'aide de personne. Moi, le montage, c'était comme la seule route que je pouvais prendre au début qui m'amenait à ça. Fait que je me suis vraiment concentré à... Mais en fait, mon but, c'était... Tu sais, je me disais peut-être que je vais travailler en montage, mais je me disais pas que ça allait être ça absolument. Mais vu que c'était une des seules choses que je pouvais faire en ma rehab, ben ça a fait en sorte que je me suis amélioré beaucoup, puis j'ai peut-être élargi mes horizons, en fait, parce qu'avant ça, je faisais du montage, c'est de sport extrême dans les choses que je faisais, puis je m'en tenais à ça. Puis de m'ouvrir à un autre milieu qui était plus... axé vers la rehab, puis les blessures quelconques, ben, je me suis retrouvé à faire des projets vidéo dans des sphères que je pensais jamais faire, en fait, là, qui étaient plus vers le documentaire, puis ça m'a ouvert des portes à travailler là-dedans à temps plein. Fait que maintenant, c'est sûr que je fais de la rehab, mais que je travaille 5 jours semaine pour payer ma rehab aussi.
Puis est-ce que tu es à ton compte ou tu fais ça, tu es avec une entreprise, tu es un employé?
J'étais à mon compte, mais là aussi, en ce moment, je travaille à Radio-Canada. Je monte beaucoup de capsules du THQ avec Mordu, je ne sais pas si tu connais ça.
Oui, oui. Mm-hmm. Ah, mais c'est vraiment cool.
Ouais. Okay. Fait que moi, je passe mes journées à monter des belles recettes qui donnent faim.
Très cool. C'est bon.
But Ben, thank you very much for coming back on the show. We're super excited for May 7th. Best of luck to you, and we'll be running with you to continue to raise funds and to support more spinal cord research. Thank you very much to my co-host as well, Manuel. And for everyone listening, this is the first bilingual episode, so very excited to hear the feedback and get some questions from people who may not understand what's happening.
It's going to be a good job of subtitles, switching it up from French to English.
Exactly.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and hopefully I can beat the score I had from last year, and if not, I'm sure we're all going to have fun on that day.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to leave your reviews for us on Apple Podcasts or message us directly on Instagram with your comments, feedback, and suggestions for future guests. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a WRG production. Produced by Leslie Woods and Forrest McKay. All the amazing graphics you see on social media are created by Ryan Bondi, and the show is hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.